Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. I know that sometimes it can seem like everything's toxic. If you read the newspaper or listen to the radio, it's sometimes today's toxic chemical du jour. But in fact, there are many alternatives out there that are not toxic, both in products that we use, ways that we can remove toxic chemicals from our bodies, even the way we think and act with each other can result be the result of a industrial viewpoint or a more natural viewpoint. Today we're going to be talking about healthcare. Many years ago in ancient Greece, centuries ago, Hippocrates said, "A wise man ought to realize that health is his most valuable possession." And I've been realizing that more and more as my body gets older and I start feeling a little less energetic and things start going wrong. And I can see that there have been choices that I've made throughout my life where I could have done things differently. If I had said, okay, when I was 12 years old, I'm going to take care of my body so it'll really serve me for the rest of my life, instead of I'm just going to push my body and make it do whatever it is that I want and not pay attention. If I had started earlier doing the things that I'm doing today and knowing the things that I know today, I think my body would be in better shape. But given that I'm doing the good things that I'm doing, I think that my body is healthier than a lot of people my age. So I think I'm doing pretty well. Today my guest is Dr. Jeff Kane. Dr. Kane doesn't practice as a doctor in the traditional way by seeing patients. Many years ago, he decided that he was going to work with patients in support groups so that they would know what their choices were in terms of healthcare. And he works with cancer patients. And a comment that he made on his website, well, actually in the description of his book, he's written a book called The Bedside Manifesto, which is about healthcare rather than technological care, is probably a good way to put it. He says, "We overuse expensive, invasive, and often hazardous technology where skilled doctor-patient contact would often accomplish more." And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about human-centered healthcare. We're going to talk about healthcare as if people mattered. Dr. Kane, thanks for being with me.
It's a pleasure, Deborah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Tell us a little about your background. What was the thing that happened, your transformation moment from being a regular medical doctor to having the viewpoint that you have?
I've been in the business now for about 45 years, and during the first 10 years, much of what I did was emergency room work. So I got to see a whole lot of patients, a real variety. And one of the things I noticed was that the way people got sick or injured and the way they led their lives was somehow related. And it was enticing, titillating, you know, but I couldn't quite figure out the connection. And I'd asked colleagues about it, and they mainly told me, "You better just get back to work." And finally, the proposition got so fascinating for me that I figured I had to just leave my practice and study it on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I wound up actually teaching philosophy at a community college, mainly asking questions like that. You know, what's the what is the body-mind relationship, and how does say stress come out of our bodies through our physiology? And when is it okay to die? You know, questions like that. So
I think
that
these are fascinating questions to me. I actually have never heard anybody, especially a medical doctor, ask those kinds of questions.
Well, those are the...
Yeah, go ahead.
Those are the foundational questions for healthcare, I think. You know, we need to settle some of the basics.
But I think that doctors, I don't want to single out doctors especially because I think patients don't ask themselves these questions either. But I know that I'm always asking myself, well, why did that happen? What did I do? What did I eat? What toxic chemicals was I exposed to? What was an emotion that I was going through that took me out of what I consider to be our natural state of health?
Mm-hmm.
That if we don't do something wrong, then we'll be healthy. And that we take ourselves out of that natural state, is my opinion. But I see that there usually is some cause, whereas the general viewpoint, especially of the technological industrial health viewpoint, is that people get sick and then you give them a pill or a surgery and they get well. And yet I think you and I know that's not the whole story.
Well, it seems like there are two perpetual styles in healthcare. I mean, they've always been with us. And for want of a better term, a lot of people who have written about it call it the mechanic and the gardener. Have you heard about these two styles?
No, but please tell us.
The mechanic wants to learn how things work, and so that when they get broken, they can get fixed. That
mm-hmm.
makes sense. And the gardener says, if we just nurture this organism, take care of it, then if healing is to happen, it'll happen on its own. So there have always been these two strains of healthcare at work.
Mm-hmm.
And we, in this culture, are just tipped in a very imbalanced way toward the mechanic. And I guess some of my work is to try to get us to recognize the gardening style again.
Well, I would say that it goes back to the fact that we live in a culture that is very machine-oriented, that we drive cars and take them to mechanics, and not so many people are gardening. But I know I went through my own personal shift where I stopped thinking industrially and started seeing that life, that my body is part of life. It's not a machine. It's as alive as a tree is alive or an animal is alive. And so it follows those rules of gardening, that we need to tend it and we need to give it water and sunshine and all of those kinds of things. And if we do that, we'll be okay. And that a large part of our health problems is that we haven't done that.
So true. And it's kind of astonishing that here we are in this 21st century. And in the healthcare business, where the issue would be critical, we don't have a decent understanding of the body-mind connection. We still think of our bodies as machinery. And truly, you know, the mechanical way of dealing with healthcare has been very effective. You know, we've been doing that for 100 years now in a very steady way, and it has accomplished a lot. It's brought us antibiotics and terrific trauma treatment and organ transplants and so on. But unfortunately, it has become a victim of its own success. In the 1940s, the little kid who would have died from diphtheria was saved by the earliest antibiotics,
mm-hmm.
and is now in her 70s, and she's getting mm-hmm. old, and she's subject to the effects of deterioration. And there isn't that much that the mechanical approach can do for her. Through the 1950s and into the 1960s, most medical visits were for acute disorders, in other words, short-term, like
mm-hmm.
infections and trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the mechanical approach, the industrial approach, as you put it, is fairly successful with.
Yes, it
and
is.
And because of its success, the ratio has now changed so that now 2 out of 3 medical visits are for chronic conditions, long-term conditions. And really, chronic is a euphemism for incurable. You know, we would cure your cancer or your lupus or your ALS if we could, but we can't, so you're going to have to live with it the rest of your life. That's what a chronic condition is.
Mm-hmm.
And the mechanical approach is not very good for chronic conditions. We have to find another way to do this.
And that's why we have gardening.
Exactly.
We need to take a break, but You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. We're talking today with Dr. Jeff Kane, author of The Bedside Manifesto, about the difference between industrial technological kind of medicine and nurturing gardening kind of natural medicine, and when each are appropriate and how to choose them. We'll be back after this. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Dr. Jeff Kane, author of The Bedside Manifesto, Healing the Heart of Healthcare. I'd like to tell you a little bit about what's going on in my life, Dr. Kane, with regard to healthcare at the moment, and two problems that I see, and maybe get your comments on these. One is, for myself, I have for many, many years taken a thyroid supplement because way back in 1990, my chiropractor said, oh, you should take a little thyroid and it'll help you with lose weight or something. And I said, okay. And I went and I got a TSH test, and it was the highest this endocrinologist had ever seen, which put me on this whole road of wrong thyroid medications for years and years and years, and difficulty finding the right one. But when I finally did find the right one, it turned out to be Armour Thyroid, a natural supplement. And my current problem is finding a medical doctor who can write a prescription to write a prescription for Armour Thyroid, because if I take anything else, it doesn't work. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, my ex-husband happens to be in the hospital because he fell 20 feet out of a tree and crushed two vertebrae. I can't say that word. He crushed two vertebrae and had a big surgery about that, and also broke both bones in his right leg and the calf. And so he's virtually living at the hospital for about 2 months while he heals from that. And the other night I went in to see him, and he had a rough toenail on the foot, on his big toe, on the foot where that was not hurt. But they put a sock on it, and every time I take the sock off for him, it catches on his toenail. And so I went to the nurse's station and I said, Larry needs to have his toenail cut because it keeps catching on his sock. And I was told that legally they could not cut his toenails, and that if I wanted his toenails cut, what they needed to do was call a podiatrist, Larry would have to pay for a podiatrist visit, a medical doctor podiatrist visit, to come cut his toenails. Now, I think both of these situations are ridiculous, personally.
Yep. And your question to me?
My question to you is, what do you think of this, and how do you think it should be? And give us a picture of how you think healthcare should be instead of what I just described.
You know, you're describing examples of a system that's way out of control, that's become so impersonal that we get almost reluctant to help one another. If you remember, I don't know how old you are, but I remember as a kid being sick and my parents calling the doctor, who came to our house with his little black bag and sat on the bedside and actually touched me. And he knew us. And
yes.
if I had asked him to trim my toenail, he would have. You know, of course he would.
Yes.
It was a very personal, intimate service, and that's really the way healthcare is supposed to be, because this is a life and death business for patients. You want that kind of intimacy.
Yes.
And since then, since say the 1960s, business types have noticed how much money is flowing past them in healthcare. And everybody wants to dip their ladle into it. So where the examining room used to contain just the patient and the doctor in this intimate kind of almost sacred sanctuary, Now it's become so full of government officials and insurance executives and pharmaceutical reps and attorneys and equipment that the original parties can barely hear one another. And so what was a very intimate and compassionate service has become kind of a cold business transaction. When I hear doctors and patients referred to as providers and consumers of health care, I fly into a rage. I think, you know, that describes kind of a store. You know, you have this product called healthcare that sits on a shelf, and the provider reaches over and passes it across the counter to the consumer.
But that's what the consumer industrial model is. It's like
exactly.
everything that we used to do, if you just roll time back to, say, 1850, then the way people lived was by growing their own food, making their own straw hats, raising barns together, building their houses, and taking care of themselves that women used to know how to do basic first aid. You didn't take somebody to the urgent care. You knew what to do. The doctor
exactly.
was probably 50 or 100 miles away, and
yep.
that everybody knew how to take care of each other. And we don't even know who the neighbors are anymore. And
well,
and so everything from growing our food to healthcare is now in that industrial consumer model.
One of the reasons I wrote this book, The Bedside Manifesto, is because what's really dangerous now is that very many doctors, the younger doctors and the younger patients, aren't aware of the history of things. They don't know that it was ever any different from this. And it's
yes.
going to take old curmudgeons like me to remind them, hey, we don't have to continue on in this impersonal way.
Well, we do need your reminding us, because I really think that it's so difficult to go to a doctor now, and it's like I need to make this decision. What I need to keep taking this supplement, but I don't want to go into the industrial medical model in order to get my prescription. And if I go to an endocrinologist, they'll want me to take Synthroid, and that's not going to do it.
Yeah.
We need to take a break in just a few seconds. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and I'm here with Dr. Jeff Kane. And when we come back, we'll talk more about industrial medicine versus personal medicine. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and we're here today with Dr. Jeff Kane, MD, who has written a book called The Bedside Manifesto, and we're talking about the difference between industrial medicine and personal medicine and how things are and how things could be. Dr. Kane, I actually thought of two things I wanted to talk about during the break, and I'm trying to decide which one of them I want to talk about first. I'll pick this one. In the beginning, you talked about needing to have a, quote, intimate, unquote, relationship with your doctor, and a patient and doctor having an intimate relationship. And I'm sure everybody understands what kind of intimacy you mean by using that word, emotionally, personally intimate, and not any other way. But do you think that concern about sexual harassment and malpractice and being sued and things like that have made doctors more distant from their patients?
Yeah, I'm sure it's had some effect. A lot of docs are afraid to get close to their patients for a number of reasons, but usually those docs have intimacy problems of their own outside their practice, you know.
That's an interesting thing to say.
Yeah. You know,
yeah, I would say, go ahead.
We have to understand something about medical training that I think non-doctors don't fully get, and that is beginning on day one of medical training, doctors are trained to be objective scientists,
mm-hmm.
and they learn how to see things as for want of a better term, discrete nouns, things outside them, and they do rather well at that, and the other part of that is they learn to downplay emotions. So as though emotions aren't real. You know, if you can pick it up and measure it and weigh it, then it's real. That's what objective science is. And subjectivity, like emotions, is less real. So try doing that. Try adopting that that view of things, and then enacting it during a career of 3 or 4 decades. And your facility for emotional, well, for expressing emotions, for feeling emotions in yourself and in others, it deteriorates, it atrophies. So that doctors become a very specialized version of our species. And I don't think a lot of non-doctors appreciate, and in fact, a lot of doctors don't appreciate how much they've been abbreviated.
So, well, do you think it's necessary for them to not feel? I mean, isn't there...
Well, there's some rationale for it. I think it's false. But, you know, you hear all the time, doctors shouldn't get emotionally involved with their patients, because if they did, they'd be crying all the time. I mean, really, if you're practicing medicine, you're waiting every day in suffering. You know, that's why people are coming to you, because they're hurting. And if you let your emotions get the better of you, you're going to be weeping instead of treating them. Well, that makes some sense. That does make some sense. And I've been involved in scenes that were in emergency rooms that were absolutely horrifying. And I had to remind myself, hey, you know, cool off and get to work. There it works. But we need some way of doctors bleeding off these emotions that they're carrying around. I mean, if you work around suffering, it's entering your body. It's affecting you. It's affecting your physiology. Check out doctors' own health statistics. They're dismal. You know, doctors don't live as long as other people. Their suicide rates are huge. Their divorce and alcoholism and drug abuse rates are terrible. And that's the reason for it. It's because they don't have any way to dissipate all the suffering that they take in because of their work. So they try to maintain this pose, and it's really impossible. My work now is mainly facilitating cancer patient support groups.
Yes.
But I have facilitated doctor support groups where they come together and just talk about what their life is like. And pretty soon it turns into a lot of yelling and screaming and crying. And these are things they've been carrying around. It's like they're going through their life with low-grade PTSD. They're in bad shape, and they need some work.
What is PTSD?
Post-traumatic stress disorder. The kind of thing you pick up on the battlefield, you know, where you have to swallow your stress for now. But like one of the people in our support group said, you know, buried suffering is always buried alive. You know, you can repress or deny your suffering right now, but it still exists in you, and it affects your physiology.
But doesn't this have a lot to do with the system and what is required of medical doctors? Strange hours and, being in a hospital, there's no windows, they can't look outside. You know, all of this being cut off from life and not being with their families and, you know, it just seems like a medical doctor's life seems unreal to me.
Well, I'm
and
a
yet,
recovering medical
doctor.
These are
the people
doctor.
That are supposed to be keeping us well.
Yeah, it's puzzling, isn't it?
I want to tell you about my doctor, because I think that I actually have what you probably are describing in your book. I haven't read your book. I've looked at your website, but I haven't read your book. But my doctor actually makes house calls. All he does is make house calls. He doesn't have an office. He goes to his patients' homes. And so he sees them in their home environment. He meets their family. He sees what's going on with them. And he's a doctor of chiropractic and massage therapist, and treats with nutrition. I get more nutrition than anything else. But the first time I saw him, he didn't ask me what was wrong with my body. He said, "Do you go for walks? Do you take probiotics? Do you know, he's like going down this whole list of things that contribute to health. Rather than asking me what was wrong. And he could observe my body and see what was wrong. He's never asked me for a history. He just talks to me and hears what I'm saying and observes my body. And And he also holds me responsible for my own health care. And so he acts as an advisor, but he never in an authoritative way says, you have to do this. He suggests things for me to do, which I can choose to do them or not if I want to get the results or not. And if something doesn't work, we talk about it. We try something else. It's a very interactive, cooperative relationship with somebody who's extremely trained and has 40 years experience working with people and helping them get well. And that's such a difference between, like, I try to go to a medical doctor to get this prescription, and the doctors keep firing me as a patient. And I think it's because I ask too many questions.
Yeah,
and I come in and say, this is what I want to do. Please give me the prescription.
Well, you're very lucky to have this doctor, and I think you're
Thank
a smart
you.
Shopper, and others can shop around just like you did. There are very humane doctors around.
Yes, I do feel very lucky to have him, and I do everything. I constantly tell him how much I appreciate him because I know how unusual he is.
Yeah.
You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad. We're talking about healthcare today with Dr. Jeff King, MD, author of Bedside Manifesto. And his website is bedsidemanifesto.com. And we'll be back soon. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Dr. Jeff King, MD, author of Bedside Manifesto. Dr. Kane, there's one more thing I just want to say about my experience with my doctor is that, you know, I hear everything that you're saying and agree with everything that you're saying about how doctors and the medical system need to change and bring more emotion. And on the other side, I think that patients need to change the way they look at healthcare providers, and what they want to get out of them. And I just want to say about an experience that I had after having my doctor be my doctor for about 6 months. I realized that I wasn't receiving all the healing that he could give to me because I wasn't letting him know me. And I needed to make a decision that I needed to be willing to show him my emotions and tell him my thoughts and participate in my care and not just have medical care be something that he does to me, but something that will really get to the root of whatever the problem is emotionally or physically, because I'm willing to be honest with him. And that I found that it really required trust, that we had to establish trust before I could even get to that point of healing with him. And it's such a special doctor-patient relationship. I know that it is very unusual, but it's also been an incredible healing experience for me because I could never get that with anyone else.
Mm. Well, Deborah, I think you've hit on the key to the to healthcare reform, actually. We're not going to get health care reform by just moving money around this way and that way.
Yeah.
Like, we're spending so ridiculously much on health care now that any conceivable redirection of it, you know, whether it's Obamacare or single payer or fee for service, is ultimately going to bankrupt the country. You know,
I agree.
We need to change the quality of health care, and the only people who can change that are those two people in the examining room, the patient and the doctor.
Yes.
There was a great book written by a pediatrician in the 1970s named Robert Mendelsohn called Confessions of a Medical Heretic.
I remember that book.
Do you?
Yeah.
He had a great piece of advice in that book. He said, doctors will come down off their pedestals as soon as patients get up off their knees.
Yes, exactly. I think that that's really true because what I see happening is that people don't take responsibility for their own lives and their own health and their own bodies. And so then they get sick and they go to their doctor and they say, oh, great, doctor who's so much more expert than me and knows all. Here, I'm going to give you money and you make me well.
Yeah.
And and that's the relationship that needs to change on both sides.
And doctors are flattered by that approach, right? I mean, if somebody comes to you on their knees and says, you know, oh, great,
yeah,
Deborah, please help me, you know,
yeah,
you're going to say, hey, I must be cool. But, you know, we don't know doctors very well. Being a recovering doctor myself, you know, I know something about the training and the personality. And the fact is that most docs are also very uncomfortable in that role. They feel like there are undue expectations put upon them, and therefore, you know, they're subject to more litigation than is necessary. But they're also, I want to say, almost literally dying for more human contact. They might not know it. It might be an unconscious thing. But when a patient approaches them personally and says, Doc, how are you doing? How are you doing?
They don't want
they
to talk.
They light up. They just, they melt. They
do,
love
but, you
those
know,
kinds
they,
of...
They want to keep their doctor distance.
Some do.
They don't say anything personal.
Some do, and so you want to keep clear of them, but some some are just ready to pop, and I've seen that repeatedly. I'm always encouraging people in cancer support groups to get more personal with their doctor, and 9 out of 10 times it works magically. Suddenly their doctor spends all this time with them because the doctor is lacking personal contact in his or her own life, and
mm-hmm.
they would appreciate that. And it also it reminds them of why they went into this business in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, I talked about doctor training as being the construction of an objective medical scientist. Well, these kids go into medicine, you know, as medical students, with altruistic stars in their eyes. They want to help people. You know, they know that medicine isn't just a business. It's a calling. And gradually they get turned into these almost automaton scientists.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that's a soul killer. And at some level inside their bodies, they realize that, hey, I started out as someone interested in this kind of medical magic. I was going to help people, and here I am working for insurance companies and the government, and I feel like I'm working on an assembly line.
Yes. Well, in these last few minutes, would you tell us, what is your picture, your vision of healthcare in the best of all possible worlds? What would it look like?
I see the relationship between doctors and patients as basically friendship. It's deep friendship. The compassion that we need on the part of both parties, really, isn't anything extraordinary. It's something that you would enact with a close friend.
Yes.
So my work is in bringing people together like this and in explaining how simple it needs to be. Like you've pointed out, so much of what makes people sick these days is our own behavior. You know,
mm-hmm.
The sedentary lifestyle, the acceptance of toxic friendships, the environmental carcinogens and other toxins that we're living in, and so on. These are all forms of lifestyle that we've accepted, and we figure docs are going to fix us. Well, that's wrong. They're not going to. So what I see is patients waking up and saying, oh, I get it. I'm sick because my life is too stressful, or because I don't have any friends, or because my job sucks, or you know, a number of things. And actually enacting a healthier lifestyle, that's the main thing we can do to improve healthcare.
I totally agree with you, and that's why I write about what I write about, because I do think that a lot of it is lifestyle. You're probably familiar with the idea of, I've read in ancient China that the doctor wasn't there to make, well, the doctor didn't get paid if you were sick. He got paid by keeping you well, and I think that that's what we need more than anything, and we're in a system that's skewed to where people don't get rewarded until people are sick, which is backwards, and people don't do things to take care of their health. until they get sick. And that if we could skew everything around to having the patient take responsibility for their own lifestyle choices that lead to health, and the doctors got paid for teaching people to be healthy and doing things like chiropractic or acupuncture or things that are supportive of the body being healthy, then we would have a very different healthcare system.
Well, it's not just you and me talking about this anymore. A lot of people are talking this way. And I'm hearing more and more from doctors a particular kind of complaint. They're saying, I wonder if I'm actually improving the health of my patients or enabling their neuroses.
Yeah.
You know, enabling them to lead unhealthy lives.
I'm glad they're asking that question.
Well, they are. And I heard a marvelous story from a doctor friend just last week. He's been after one particular patient to change his ways for years. You know, you really have to lose. If you lost 40 pounds, you wouldn't have diabetes anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And things like that, you know, trying to get him to exercise and eat differently and so on. And the guy always promises to do it, and he just doesn't follow through. So finally the doctor blew up at him. He yelled and screamed at him, you know, I'm wasting my time with you. I'm going to fire you. And the patient said, oh, I guess you are serious. And he's beginning to act differently now. So here's the doctor who's come down off his objective scientist pedestal and actually gotten emotional with the patient. And the patient is perceiving finally what the doctor's been saying all along.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that there's actually a lot more than the medical part. It's like as an author, I know my subject that I write about, but I also have to know, like, how to use social media. You know, I need these auxiliary skills, and I think the doctors need auxiliary skills too. That in addition to knowing, you know, what's the right vitamin or the right drug, that they also need to know how to interact with people, their patients, so that they get them, inspire them, and get them to actually be compliant. And as well, the patients need to take responsibilities, but still, that's something. It's been a pleasure to talk with you, Dr. Kane. I really so admire what you're doing, and I think that you're exactly on the right track.
And you're doing your part as a patient.
Thank you.
I think this is marvelous.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, that's all the time we have today. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and you can find out more about this show at ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com.